Back together again, you and I, starting off a brand new week on Monday, January 29th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. We began the show looking at comments made by Connecticut U.S. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy on CNN regarding an immigration and border security package he's currently working on. Retired U.S. Army Colonel Joe Bucino back on the show. He talked about a weekend attack by Iran-backed militants on U.S. forces in the Middle East. So, you remember years ago, long time ago, in a land far away. Now, when we were young, years ago, when we were youngins, and we'd go to either the local neighborhood store, to the deli counter there, or we go to, you know, the supermarket. Whew, they were big. They had big, them people in the super. See, there was the store on your corner where you knew everybody, kind of like Cheers, where everybody knows your name. And then you went to the supermarket. But boy, those can piles were high in the supermarket. They were highfalutin people in the supermarket. They had all the high tech stuff. Anyway, you know, years ago, we would either go to the corner store, the neighborhood store, the family store, much kind of the one that my family ran. Or we go to the supermarket, the big chain or the statewide company, and we go to the deli counter. And everybody, especially in the smaller situations, you know, when the stores would get busy, even some of the bigger stores, it was kind of an honor system thing when you got to the deli market or the deli counter or the meat counter or the butcher counter. In the part of the store, and everybody would be there filling orders. Yes, I have those fond days of hearing words that used to send shivers of sheer terror up my spine. Can I have 2 pounds of American cheese sliced thin? Oh, my God. First of all, why do you need it thin? Just eat it. Just shut up and eat it. Anyway, but I digress. Can you tell I've had a whole lot of cold medicine? But the bottom line is, after a while, the honor system didn't work anymore because the crowds got too big. And instead of saying, okay, who's next? Mary Jo, were you there? Well, I was there. Well, no, do you need anything? Because I only need one thing. No, you go now. No, you go ahead. After a while, even the smaller stores and the bigger stores said, hey, time out, white team, let's get a number system, which tries to manage the flow of people that were coming there anyway. And eventually, and we still do it now, sometimes if there's not more than one or two people ahead of us, that's right, you go to the corner store, you go to your corner deli, your favorite spot to hang out to buy stuff, or you go to Big Y or Stop and Shop or, you know, ShopRite, wherever, Aldi's, wherever you're going, and you take a number. If there's a good crowd there, you don't say, hey, can I just get in here? No, you take a number. Okay. What am I driving at here? I think you know what I'm driving at here already. The details here are starting to leak out of what is in this immigration bill, this bill that was negotiated in the Senate by Jim Lankford of Oklahoma, by Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, and by our own Chris Murphy, Connecticut's junior Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, who helped negotiate this. And what did I tell you last week and in the weeks leading up to this? All this is going to be, at least from what I can see, and I'll give you some audio cuts here in just a second of Chris Murphy. What I can see is this is not cutting down the number of people at the deli counter. This is not trying to maintain some sort of scenario where you try and say, hey, we just don't have the capacity to take you. And whatever your deli order is or your asylum claim is, all this sounds like it's going to be, which is exactly what I warned you about over the past couple of weeks. This is just going to streamline a system that will further be abused. See, there's one of two things we can do here, and maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised, but according to what you'll hear in a couple of seconds here from Chris Murphy and stuff I've been able to find on some other websites, all this is going to do, you know what this is going to do? This is all the cartels that help funnel people to the border and get them here in the human smugglers. This is just going to say, okay, maybe we should do this now with a day planner. Or maybe these cartels will set up a Google Calendar page, kind of like the one I do to figure out my guest grids for the next couple of weeks. Because Chris Murphy was asked about this yesterday on CNN. He appeared on, I think, State of the Union on CNN. He gave very few details on this. He wasted little time bashing Donald Trump, and many of you may like that, many of you may hate that. But it's kind of interesting when Dana Bash was actually able to kind of pin himself down a little bit. All I heard was exactly what I thought I was going to hear. Well, the president will have the authority to do this if he wants to. And we're going to set up daily quotas that we need to get under. I will let Senator Murphy pick up the conversation from here, and we'll get into some of these numbers as hour one goes on here. And if any of this strikes you as, you can chime in on that right here at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC.
Three lawmakers negotiating that deal, Democratic Senator Chris Murphy. Thank you so much for being here this morning. Do you have a deal?
Well, we do have a bipartisan deal. We're finishing the text right now. And the question is whether Republicans are going to listen to Donald Trump, who wants to preserve chaos at the border because he thinks that it's a winning political issue for him, or whether we are going to pass legislation which would be the biggest bipartisan reform of our border and immigration laws in 40 years and would give the president of the United States, whether that president is a Republican or a Democrat, new important power to be able to better manage the flow of people across the border. We are sort of finalizing the last pieces of text right now. This bill could be ready to be on the floor of the United States Senate next week, but it won't be if Republicans decide that they want to keep this issue unsettled for political purposes. So I was glad to hear the president come out and speak forcefully in favor of this bill. I am hopeful that we will still have enough Republicans in the Senate who want to fix the problem at the border rather than just do Donald Trump's bidding. But we will see over the next 24 to 48 hours whether that's true.
I want to get to some of the more specific substance in this deal in a minute. But because you mentioned Donald Trump and the role that he is now playing actively, apparently lobbying his fellow Republicans in, never mind the House, but also in the Senate to kill the bill. Are you confident that you even have the Republican support in the Senate? What are you hearing?
Well, I hope that we have the Republican support for this bill. And I think that there are many Republicans in the Senate who are sincere about trying to come together and do our job. And listen, right now, the president does not have the tools that he needs in order to stop the flow of 10,000 people a day to better manage the asylum system. So let's come together and give him those tools. But let's also be cognizant of the fact that if we don't pass this bill, Ukraine won't get its military funding. Remember, the whole reason that we are talking about borders is because Republicans have said they will let Vladimir Putin march his army in and through Ukraine if we don't pass a bill that includes border provisions and Ukraine funding. So the consequence of failure here is not just that we keep immigration as an open issue available for Donald Trump to exploit in the next election. It is also that Ukraine loses this war and that Russia marches its army to the edge of Europe. That would be catastrophic for the United States and for the whole world. So the stakes here are high. The consequences of failure are enormous. And I do have confidence that enough Republicans in the Senate are going to join us to pass this bipartisan legislation, potentially as early as the next week or two. And we can show that Washington can still stand up and work on these big problems, even if Donald Trump is rooting for chaos.
Yeah. And you know as well as I do that a lot of Republicans don't hear that as a carrot because they don't want to support funding for Ukraine. But I want to look specifically more at what is in this deal that you are talking about right now. President Biden says that it will allow him to close the border entirely if migrants crossing exceed a certain level. He says he would exercise that authority as soon as it is signed into law. Is he right that what you were talking about would grant him authority to close the border?
So we'll be able to talk in more detail about this proposal once the text is written. Obviously, we want to make sure that our colleagues are the first ones who see the final product. But yes, this bill will include an ability for the president to shut down the border in between the ports of entry when crossings reach catastrophically high levels. Not permanently, but until we are able to be able to better process people who are crossing the border. It also reforms the asylum system. Right now, as you know, Dana, it takes sometimes 5 to 10 years for somebody to get their asylum claim heard. That's not fair to anybody, including the migrant, that it takes that long. We would shorten that time frame down to 6 months in some cases. And then it would get people work permits faster. Right now, what we know is that these people who are coming into the country are, you know, on our streets or in our homeless shelters. So we would make sure that folks who are coming to the country who are applying for asylum have the ability to work. That's something that our mayors and our governors really want.
Senator, Republicans, including the House Speaker, argue, a lot of them, not the ones you're dealing with, but a lot of them argue that President Biden already has the authority that he needs to secure the border. And they're criticizing this deal that you've been negotiating. What do you make of that, of the notion that President Biden already has tools and he doesn't need more yet?
Well, it's just not true. It's a political talking point. Those same Republicans in the House of Representatives who say President Biden has the tools introduced H.R. 2, which is a massive border reform bill. They said it was one of their most important priorities. And so Republicans have said openly that they want to pass border and immigration reform. All of a sudden, they are against border and immigration reform because they are worried it's actually going to pass.
All right, there you have Chris Murphy from CNN yesterday and his questioning there with Dana Bash. Now, if you listen very carefully, there were some verbal cues there and some words that were there and weren't there. Now, early in that, and there are specifics about this, but again, what have I been telling you about this for the last 2, 3, 4 months? All this is going to be a much better, they think, a much more streamlined, they think, way for people to still jump the line. This is going to, as Chris Murphy said, because I listened carefully to this 3 times before I aired it, this is going to help manage the flow at the border. So we're not actually doing anything to tell people you can't just come here when you want to and hop the line and cut off people who are doing this lawfully. Many of your own same country women and country men doing this. And then Chris Murphy says, hey, this is going to be so great. You're going to be able to get a work permit in 6 months. Well, hey, we're going to help you cut the line here. And then, of course, this whole thing about, you know, the president could, you know, if he wanted to, oh, boy, he has his super secret decoder ring. And now we will give him the authority to shut down the border if he wants to. Let me ask you something. What's more of a chance? Me starting in center field for the New York Yankees on opening day, or a Democrat in the White House shutting the border? I think you know what that is. I'm getting measured for my uniform as we speak. Next guest coming up is going to give us his thoughts on what the U.S. does now after what happened over the weekend. 3 Americans killed, dozens more injured in connection with an overnight drone strike in northeast Jordan near the Syrian border over the weekend. Now, before we get to Colonel Joe Bacino, our guest on that subject in a few seconds, here is what was said earlier today at the White House. National Security Council spokesman Admiral John Kirby asked about how and when might the U.S. retaliate on all this.
We do not seek another war. We do not seek to escalate. But we will absolutely do what is required to protect ourselves, to continue that mission, and to respond appropriately to these attacks. Now, I know the first set of questions I'm going to get are, what does that look like? What's appropriate? And what response options is the president considering? I hope you can understand why I'm not going to telegraph any punches here from the podium, nor will I get in front of the president or his decision-making. He's met twice with his national security team yesterday and today. He's weighing the options before him. As he said yesterday, we will respond. We'll do that on our schedule, in our time, and we'll do it in the manner of the president's choosing as commander-in-chief. We'll also do it fully cognizant of the fact that these groups, backed by Tehran, have just taken the lives of American troops. And I think I'll leave it there.
Retired U.S. Army Colonel Joe Bacino joining us again. He served this nation for 27 years, tours of duty in the Middle East and Ukraine, and he also is the founder of a full services strategic communications consulting. He spent many years up front in several organizations in the military in a communications role, but also obviously is very familiar with many areas where we see conflicts. Today, Colonel, hi, it's Paul again in Bridgeport at WICC. Great to have you back. How are you?
Well, you know, I wish there were better
circumstances
here. Obviously we're thinking of, and your audience is thinking of, these three Army soldiers. The names were announced today. We're thinking of their families. We're thinking of their fellow soldiers who are still in harm's way.
What did you think of what you heard, Colonel, from John Kirby? Not surprising, and he mentioned the president being given options here. So take us into a little of that. When something like this happens, what kind of options and who is the president meeting with?
Let me just parse a little bit of what he said. I like that guy. He's been a mentor of mine, John Kirby, I'm talking about. Let me just parse a little bit of what he said. He said, we're going to respond at the time and place of our choosing. That is past. The time and place of our choosing was October, November, December, when these Shia proxy groups were hitting hard at our bases, rocketing our bases. Now he says, well, they've struck and killed three soldiers. Now we've got to attack. Well, let me ask you this question, or let me ask your audience this question. Say that I tried to murder you and I missed you. I tried to shoot you and I missed. The police wouldn't say, okay, we're good here. He missed. He didn't actually kill him. We're good. Okay, they've been trying to kill soldiers for months. This is different because they slipped one through.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I argued in early December. There's an article, an op-ed, under my name, we must strike inside of Iran to protect American soldiers. You asked about the options. These options were floated starting in November. They come out of Tampa, the command headquarters there in Tampa for all of forces in the Middle East. They were floated. There's a number of options. They were all waved off, and now we've got to do it.
So, Colonel, options, military sites, manufacturing sites, civilian sites, all of the above, none of the above, transportation hubs. What are some of the targets? I know we're just guessing here, but you have the experience here. What are some of the targets we may be looking at here?
No civilian sites. So they'd range on the... At this point, you're boxed in, okay? You've got to strike something that Iran cares about. So on the low end, you're talking about their fast boats in the Persian Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you scale up from there, and you're talking about, their naval fleet, which is, a very, very old naval fleet. You sink that or sink a few of those Navy destroyers, in the Persian Gulf. We call it the Arabian Gulf in the region. And then you go up from there and you're talking about the IRGC, Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps. This is the special military that serves the Ayatollah. You know, you hit those bases and you hit them at night, just like they hit this tower in Pakistan. By the way, I was at this tower, Tower 22,
wow.
10 months ago. So you hit their bases at night when you can really limit the damage you're going to do and the number of Iranian troops you're going to kill. So that's really the options range in there. You can go up from there, but in this first salvo, this first shot inside Iran, you don't want to go beyond what I just said.
The Iranian government, the IRGC, is, Colonel, and you please correct me if I'm wrong, is their mission not, or part of their mission that they've undertaken here now, especially with the Hamas-Israel war, they want that area destabilized, do they not? I mean, that's one of their goals, is it not?
Well, yes, that's a goal, but the strategic goal, the broader goal, is to get Americans out of the region. Because if Americans are out of the region, they can really reinforce their assets and their government in Baghdad and in the Kurdish parts of Iraq and in Syria. So they can bully the region if Americans are out. Part of the calculus, part of the thinking here for Iran is, you know, this America first mentality that's taking hold here under the Trump years is that, you know, there's a thinking in Congress. Why do we have these troops in Pakistan? Why do we have these American soldiers in Syria? If they're just sitting ducks, if they're just at risk, why don't we get them out? So that's a little bit of what Iran is thinking. Iran's looking at Ukraine. You know, we've basically gotten bored of that war. And so, you know, there is a question about funding Ukraine. And so that's a little bit of what Iran is thinking, that they're pushing the envelope and wondering what this response is going to look like. Can they withstand it? And is there going to be a call from D.C., where I am right now, from Republicans in D.C., to pull troops out of the region?
If that happens, Colonel, and the guest, by the way, is Colonel Joe Bacino, retired U.S. Army colonel, served his nation for 27 years. I am disturbed, as you might be and as others are, by this America First notion. If we were to drastically or completely eliminate our forces in the area with the presence of Iran there and other ne'er-do-wells, what happens?
You're seeing it a little bit, what happens. Look, does the Middle East matter? I don't know. You would ask Maersk, ask these commercial shipping giants that are now have now added 7 to 10 days to their routes because they can't go through the Suez Canal because this motorcycle gang, the Houthis in Yemen, is firing rockets and drones at them. You know, this motorcycle gang is contributing to global inflation. So, you know, the Middle East matters. First of all, if you have a flashpoint in that region that shuts down oil, you know, 10% of global oil comes out of there. If you have a flashpoint that shuts that down, it's really going to impact the global economy. If we don't do anything about commercial shipping, it's really going to impact the global economy. So the region matters. We've got to have a minimum footprint. I think we have, you know, the forces we need, just barely the forces we need right now just to keep Iran at bay. But the idea of, you know, look, does it make sense from just a practical view? Everybody wants American forces, mm-hmm. you know, back home and husbanding resources and taking care of resources, preserving them in here. Okay. I bet everybody wanted American troops out of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Well, that was a bad idea. In terms of geopolitics, things are a little more complicated than that, particularly in this very, very volatile region.
And also, Colonel, and I've sent this stuff to friends of mine over the years who are trying to digest this. I mean, I've seen these flow charts, and you've probably seen them too, and I'm sure they're not 100% correct, but it is amazing to me, the more I read about this, how the tentacles of Iran, and I always tell people it's not the Iranian people, the so-called Persians, many of whom would like to be more westernized, but the Ayatollahs, mm-hmm. the mullahs, the rulers in Iran, whose tentacles in numerous terrorist groups and terrorist actions reach to almost every part of the world.
That's right. And that's really this war. You know, we've been in a low grade war with Iran since October. We just don't recognize it as such. And this is the kind of war that Iran wants to fight. They've subcontracted the fighting off to these groups they don't really care about. And one thing that you find interesting is find a protest movement or a march inside of Iran on behalf of Palestine, on behalf of the Palestinian people. You won't find it. It's not an issue they care about. Iran is a Shia country. Mm-hmm. It's a Shia republic, you know, overthrown by a Shia revolutionary movement in 1979. You know, and the Gaza, the people in Gaza, the Palestinian people, these are overwhelmingly Sunni. So that's not an issue they care about at all. It's not an issue the mullahs care about, and it's not an issue that the Iranian people care about. They've hijacked it really to push their weight around the region.
And finally, though, Colonel, Hamas, I mean, would they exist without the help of Iran and their money and their arms? Would Hamas be able to function as they are or not?
Hamas would be able to function. You know, I wouldn't overstate the support Hamas. Iran provides some support, some munitions, some funding, but really, Iran actually has very limited control over Hamas. And, you know, the funding, a lot of the funding that Hamas has received over the last 5 years has been from Benjamin Netanyahu, a story that broke in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Netanyahu wanted to keep Hamas strong as a parallel track to the Palestinian Authority. So, look, you're talking about things that are, you know, very complicated and very deep, but you know, it's certainly to Iran's benefit that Hamas is caused chaos on October 7th. And the longer this fighting goes in Gaza, the better it is for Iran.
Folks, the website is Joe Buccino Consulting, JoeBuccino Consulting.com. Our guest, retired Army Colonel Joe Buccino, with a long career in communications, and also can take what you need and your desires from a very organized military point of view as well. Colonel, thank you. We appreciate it, and we will chat down the road, sir. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, please have me back on, and thanks to all your listeners. Thanks for having me.
We will, Colonel. Thank you. Army Lieutenant, Colonel, retired Colonel Joe Buccino. Once again, Joe Buccino Consulting.com. There you go.